content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book, The First Time Gardener, Growing Vegetables, All the Know-How and Encouragement You Need to Grow and Fall in Love with, Your Brand New Food Garden. And this is by Jessica Sowards of Roots and Refuge Farm. And we start with the introduction that she gives, and it says, I do not believe that anyone actually has a black thumb. A gardener may be slightly distracted, underinformed, a little neglectful, or may have been dealt a bad hand of circumstances. Whatever the issue, it can be amended. You can be a gardener. You and your thumb can grow food. I used to claim to have a black thumb, and for a while I was genuinely convinced that I could not garden. I would say that if my mother's home was a rehab center where even the sickest plants could go and live, mine was the hospice where they went to die. I killed a tremendous amount of plants. My first food garden was an 8-by-10-foot patch of soil that I cultivated by hand in my suburban backyard in my early 20s. Even though I considered myself a black-thumbed plant murderer, I had been wooed yet again by the seasonal displays of plants and seeds at the local home improvement store. I had very little money and even less knowledge, but what I lacked in those departments, I made up for in zeal and pig-headed determination. I would be a gardener, I decided. It took a solid 2 days of work to rip out the grass and dig the rocks out of the soil and with hand tools. I exhausted my entire budget on a dozen started plants, tomatoes, peppers, zucchini, and one lone basil. As I put them in the ground, I began to feel a little hope. My shoulders were sunburned and my back was screaming, but maybe my thumb wasn't so black after all. Then it began to rain and continued to do so for 17 consecutive days. The local news talked about the record-breaking rainfall. The river breached its banks, farmers lost their spring crops, and in my suburban backyard, my very first garden died a watery death. The garden and I may not have had a very smooth start, but now we are very dear friends. In growing food, I have found one of my greatest passions. These days, my garden is an expanse of over 10,000 square feet. Within its fences, I grow a large majority of my family's vegetable needs. It's still hard work, and I still fail and kill plants. However, I have no qualms in calling myself a gardener. As the years have passed and my harvest baskets have seen overflowing bounty, I found another passion in the garden. I love encouraging other people to take the first steps of their food-growing journey. Planting the love of gardening in the hearts of others is almost as thrilling to me as tucking seeds into the soil. Seeing a harvest of gardeners gushing over their successes and overcoming their failures brings me almost as much joy as a basket full of sun-warmed tomatoes sitting on my kitchen table. There are few things in life quite as thrilling and rewarding as a seedling breaking through the soil, tiny fruits forming on plants, and a plate of food that you grew yourself. This will be a journey, and you will never fully arrive. The garden is a continual classroom for anyone who is determined to be a continual student. For this first stage of your journey, it is my great honor to be your teacher. And I'm just, let me see about, let me see where this is, where she lives, just so we'll know. She's in Arkansas. Okay. So that's not the Central Arkansas, so that's pretty close to North Carolina. So we'll think about this is a little warmer than the last book we read, that was in New York. And we start with Welcome to the Classroom. More than anything else, as a teacher of gardening, I want to create a space where there is grace to learn. Sometimes I find myself reiterating basic phrases like, if you don't know something, you don't know it. This should not be a profound statement, but for whatever reason, in our modern day society, people are intimidated and ashamed by their own ignorance. To be ignorant is to simply be uneducated in a matter. It's okay if you are ignorant about gardening. It has not been a normal part of our education. It has not been an integral part of most of our upbringing. It's okay that you haven't learned this before. But I am so proud and thankful that you are learning it now. There are no dumb questions here. You made the choice to read this book. You are making the choice to become a gardener. You are choosing to be a student, to take the approach of constant observation, learning, and growing. This is not a pass-fail class. You do not garden for a season and turn your harvest in at the end to receive your final grade. It's not a college course that must be repeated if it isn't passed. Make no mistake, you will have failures. In fact, I hope you overcome spectacular failures in your journey, because people who fail big are people who took big chances and tried new things. These are the people who end up making new discoveries and developing new methods. The key, I have found, is to fail in a forward motion. If something doesn't work, make observations, change variables, and try again. Growing your own food is such a thrilling and empowering endeavor. You can have lots of success in your first year of gardening, and I am excited to help you. However, you will be harvesting more than meals from your garden this year. You will also be harvesting wisdom. And don't forget, you'll be harvesting some yummy vegetables. I couldn't believe what the tomatoes taste like out of the garden, and the difference from buying them in a store. So try it. You'll like it. This is it. Gardening is fun. It was my first year last year. I made a lot of mistakes, but I am learning a ton by reading these books as well. And we continue with understand that with every lesson, every mistake, every success, every harvest, every spectacular failure, you are growing a gardener. Yes, you. This year, instead of stating that you have decided to have a garden, state that you have decided to become a gardener. Every good gardener is still learning, adapting to the weather, troubleshooting issues, and growing in skill year after year, season after season. You will learn so many lessons during your first gardening season. You may learn how large tomato plants get very large, or how fast okra grows very fast, or how many cucumbers can grow on a single plant, and that's very many. You will learn how to judge whether soil is damp enough, and you will probably have at least one moment where you look at an insect and think, "What the heck is that?" You will definitely learn how much work and time it requires to grow a garden. I won't sugarcoat this. Growing your own food entails hard work. It's physically demanding, requires showing up when you don't feel like it, and yes, sometimes you fail. These are facts. One fact outweighs them, though. You can do hard things. This is a worthy endeavor. In a few short months, you will know the incredible joy of nurturing something to the point of harvest. Your phone will be filled with photos of plants in all stages. You will experience the elation of finding immature fruits forming and of making the first harvest. And guess what? It never gets old. If you choose to be a student, if you choose to embrace the process, you get to experience this from now on. Even now, I am writing a gardening book and marveling at the harvest on my kitchen table. Even still, I think that wonder at least 5 times a week. Whoa, I grew that. Every day I show up to my garden classroom, and though I show up to teach, I also show up to learn. In your garden, you will learn patience, process, and persistence. You will learn to slow down. You will learn to give your best efforts to the things you can control, and you will learn to adapt to the things you cannot. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to the garden. In this classroom, I don't want to teach you what to think. I want to teach you how to learn. I want to teach you to ask questions, adapt to conditions, and overcome obstacles. I am certain this book will end up in the hands of many, many future gardeners. My hope goes beyond that, though. My hope is that the book you are currently holding is in the hands of a future gardening teacher. And it's not what you're holding, it's what you're listening to, and that's okay. Yes, you. My sincere hope is that you will embrace the garden as a classroom, and in doing so, you will choose to grow yourself as you learn to grow your dinner. Then one day, you will be equipped to turn around and offer the same encouragement to some other hopeful, ignorant new gardener. You become a teacher of gardening when you sow the seeds of what you've learned in someone else. It may look like lending a helping hand to a neighbor, sharing your started plants, giving a tour of your garden, or just chatting about tips and advice in line at the farmer's market. It may look like community efforts, participating in seed swaps, offering to do a demonstration, or simply raising your babies and grandbabies to know the things you weren't taught as a child. We end the cycle of ignorance when we are no longer ashamed of the things we don't know. And in this day and age, I'm just adding this little moment here, is that the price of vegetables is going up so much that having your own in the garden and having as much as you want in the garden is a good thing. And we go to the next chapter, and it's a crash course in botany. Botany is the scientific study of plants. You don't have to be a botanist to have a successful home garden. However, there are some basic botanical facts I'd like you to understand because I think it will help you understand your garden more fully. Also, nature is just very, very cool. The first lesson in home gardening is that your garden does not know it's growing to feed you. Your plants have one objective and one objective only. Make seeds and spread the seeds to keep their kind alive. The terms fruit and vegetable mean different things in the culinary world than in the botanical world. In botanical terms, the word vegetable really doesn't mean anything. There is no botanical classification for vegetable. What we have come to know as vegetables are actually just parts of plants. Carrots, radishes, beets, and turnips are roots. Celery, leeks, and rhubarb are stems. Kale, lettuce, and chard are leaves. In the case of most herbs, we are also eating leaves. When we eat beans, shelled peas, and corn, we are eating seeds in various stages of maturity. Some plants have fruit. A fruit is a seed-bearing structure. It is, in short, the ovary of a plant. A tomato is a fruit. A cucumber is also a fruit. Peppers, melons, okra, and squash are all fruit. Fruiting plants set flower blossoms. The flowers of some plants contain both the male and the female reproductive organs within one flower. Other plants have separate male and female flowers. Either way, pollination happens when the pollen produced by the male organs of the plant comes in contact with the female organs of the plant. When this happens, the fruit begins to swell, and inside it, fertile seeds begin to form. As the fruit grows, the seeds inside mature. As the seeds mature to the point of viability, the fruit moves into the next phase of plant spread the seeds. It ripens. It becomes colorful and tasty and fragrant. It attracts animals. It attracts us. The fruit with its seeds is then carried in the hands or bellies of said creatures. The seeds spread and the plant has fulfilled its purpose. The non-fruiting foods we know as vegetables, where we get the roots, leaves, and stems mentioned above, also produce flowers. When they reach a certain stage of maturity, this can be rushed by warm weather, they send up a center stalk and produce a cluster of blossoms on the end. This is called bolting, or going to seed. As these flower stalks dry, the plant seeds mature either in clusters in the dried flower head or in pods that develop along the stalk. If you ever feel unsure of where a plant keeps its seeds, just wait a little while longer. Usually, once seeds are developed and mature, it becomes pretty obvious. These vegetable plants are growing for the sole purpose of reproducing as well. However, when we give them space in our garden, we usually end their life cycle before they get to that point. Most of the vegetables we eat are harvested when the plant is still very young and immature. For example, you can pull up a carrot plant and eat the root, but you will never see that carrot plant flower or get to collect its seeds. If you are watching a head of lettuce grow and wondering where it keeps its seeds, just wait a few months. It's just not old enough yet. It hasn't developed enough to make seeds, but it will. Here on my farm, we feed all the waste from the garden to the animals. The broken branches, bolted plants, and fruits ruined by pests all get tossed over the fence to the chickens and pigs. Every year, by the end of the summer, their paddocks are filled with an array of tomato plants, cucumbers, squashes, and bolted root vegetables. A volunteer is any plant that grows on its own, not planted by a gardener. These can grow from seeds that blow in the wind, lay dormant in the soil from seasons past, or, in the case of my pig pasture, grow in the waste of the animal that ate the seeds, digested them, and left them behind. The bottom line is, seeds want to grow. Plants are doing their very best all the time to survive until they reproduce. Gardening, though, it has many scientific factors, if not rocket science. You aren't trying to convince a thing to do something it doesn't want to. You are partnering with the natural drive of plants and giving them the best shot you can of surviving and reproducing. Volunteers have served as loud cheerleaders in my gardening journey. They speak a clear message that you really don't have to understand the garden to have success with it. Surely, if my pigs can grow a garden with their poop, we can grow one with our best efforts. And our next topic is heirlooms, hybrids, and GMOs. The heirloom versus hybrid argument comes up often in gardening talk. Like arguments often do, this one has a lot of false information and misunderstanding surrounding it. Let's clear this up so you can make informed decisions for your garden. An heirloom variety is a cultivar, a plant variety produced by selective breeding. That has been around for a long time. Some people consider cultivars that have been consistent for 50 years to be heirlooms. Some people argue they should be at least 75 years old, while still others say they should be 100 years old. Whatever the number of years, heirlooms are varieties that are handed down through the generations. We hear the term heirloom used often with tomatoes, but heirloom applies to all kinds of plants. Hybrid, by definition, simply means a cross between two things. One common misperception among new gardeners is that hybrids and genetically modified organisms, GMOs, are the same thing. GMO seeds are not naturally occurring. GMO seeds happen in scientific labs, while hybrids happen by naturally crossing two plants of the same genus. I won't talk much about GMOs except to say you don't need to worry about them in the home garden. There's a lot of misinformation about this, and I get a lot of messages from new gardeners who are very afraid of accidentally purchasing GMO seeds. GMO seeds are illegal to sell to home gardeners. Whether you purchase online from a seed company, at a big box store, or at your local feed store, you won't accidentally purchase these seeds. Didn't know that. And our next topic is hybrids are not all bad. And we probably won't be able to finish this topic, so I'll start it again in our next podcast. When I was a kid in the 1990s, my mom would always put an orange in our Christmas stockings. I thought this was really bizarre and usually opted to eat the chocolate first, putting the orange back in the fruit bowl on the table with the rest of the oranges. When I was older, I realized my mom was just doing the same thing her parents did. They put an orange in her stocking because when they were children in the 1920s, the orange they received on Christmas morning was one of their most exciting gifts. That was, of course, because an orange outside of a tropical growing zone in the 1920s was a rare treat. My grandparents prized their oranges because they only got to eat them once a year on Christmas morning. And this, a century ago, before food was routinely shipped across the world, people sourced their food locally. People routinely grew kitchen gardens, saved their seeds, and shared them. If they didn't garden, they sourced food from local farmers. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Service. And we will continue with this book in our next podcast. We hope you join us. Thank you.